Sega's Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey guys, this is Merrick Brave with the Black and the Brave Wrestling Academy, and you're listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast.
Hey everyone, Matt Michaels and King Lucky here, and we are with the one and only Michael Mardonias. Of course, I fuck it up right there. I say it fine, and then I fuck it up. Sorry about that, Mikey.
Close enough. It's all good. How you guys doing?
Doing good, brother. Doing good.
Good, man. Yeah.
What kind of thing are you doing on this lazy Tuesday, brother?
Man, well, honestly, right now, just playing some Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. We got this new Nintendo Switch, and I'm just, like, stuck on it right now. So, yeah, I'm a little bit addicted. And, yeah, just hanging out, getting ready for this fight week. Got a lot of friends coming into town for this UFC coming up. My buddy Deron Wynn is fighting on the card. We got Daniel Cormier coming into town, so I'm sure we'll be hanging out with him this weekend. And, yeah, another fight week in Vegas.
Wayne, what?
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty exciting fight.
Yeah, what is a fight week like, you know, for those who haven't experienced it, especially with your background and history with MMA? You get to see and experience things most people don't.
Yeah, fight week is a little bit different for me because I'm usually... Everyone comes to Vegas, you know, so everybody hits you up like, oh, I'm in Vegas, let's rage, let's party. And so usually it's me consisting getting shit-faced for like 6 days straight and just seeing a bunch of people I haven't seen in a long time. It's different when I'm working a fight. Like when I'm involved in a fight camp, it's all business during fight week. So you're going through everything from the weight cut to all the press and the media leading up to the fight, and then the actual fight itself, which is like the most nerve-wracking week ever, you know. So even 2 weeks out, it gets pretty intense. I call it two-week-itis with the fighters because everybody's on edge, you know, like they're just looking for something to be pissed off about, and, you know, it happens with everybody. So, yeah. So it all depends on if I'm working the fight or not. But for a typical fan, fight week in Vegas is really intense. I mean, you could be sitting at the bar, and next thing you know, you'll be sitting next to Chuck Liddell or, you know, some legend, you know, just hanging out. It's a real treat and experience for those who haven't checked it out.
Yeah, funny story. I was at the Palms many years ago when Travis Brown was still fighting, and I'm at a slot machine, and he walks by. I'm like, hey, what's up, Travis? He's like, what's up, man? And I'm like, hey, can I get a pick? And he's like, yeah, man, I'll be right back. So I thought he totally fucking blew me off. He walked away, and stand-up guy, he came back and took a picture with me, you know, and he didn't really have to, but it's one of those things that, you know, like, just out of nowhere, you can see, yeah, you know, your favorite fighters, you know, so.
It's a trip. It's, you know, and if they're walking through the lobbies and stuff like that, they know, they want to be approached. So that's always a cool thing. They're expecting, you know, the fan support. So, yeah, it's cool. It's like no other city on fight night, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I've followed your career for quite some time, just what you do. Most people know you as Lazy the Savage. Where'd the moniker come from?
Dude, I've been called Lazy since, like, seventh grade because, like, all my friends want to go out. And I just wanted to sleep and take naps all the time and, you know, get stoned pretty much. I discovered weed at a very young age and just was your definition of a burnout at the time. But the savage part came from, like, Zeus from Middle Easy, too. He was just like, dude, you're a savage, because when it came to working and getting a scoop, I mean, back then when I was working for Middle Easy, it was just like, God, we were, you know, if a fight broke out, I was you know, in the middle of it filming, you know, it was just like crazy like that, you know, just behind the scenes stuff that a lot of people weren't willing to get and would never have the balls to pull out a camera during, you know, I was kind of known for that. So yeah, it kind of just stuck. And so, yeah, it was Lazy the Savage from then on.
And you've been around combat sports and now sports entertainment for, I mean, we're talking well over a decade, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's like 11, 12 years, something like that, dude. It's funny because, like, I go back and I see some of these old posts of mine, like, when I was first getting started before I had ever, like, been involved in a camp, and I was just a complete fanboy. And I'm like, oh, my God, bro, you might as well. Like, me in, like, tap-out shirts. You know, I was like one step away from blasting Face the Pain, you know, in my car. I was that kind of, you know.
Love it.
But, dude, back then it was a little different. If you saw somebody wearing a tap out shirt back then, it was like you saw somebody from like the Fight Club. You know, you're
right.
Like, dude,
right.
Let's talk, because, you know, it wasn't, you know, common to see somebody wearing that kind of shit back then. But, yeah, fuck. Stone,
what
I was even talking about. But
well, look, let me ask you this: how'd you even get started in what you were doing? You said you used to get fight cam stuff like that. Were you a photographer?
No, man, I was in the Navy, and a buddy of mine was in the Navy, was a huge Robbie Lawler fan, and he was telling me about this Nick Diaz kid that was from my same area, you know, Northern California. I'm from the 209 as well, not right outside of Stockton, you know, I'm about 45 minutes away outside of where I was raised. So we don't have shit out there. You know, if anybody knows anything about that area, it's like cows and fucking crackheads. You know, that's all there is out there. So when I heard that there was just, you know, this kid whooping ass. And I was always a fan of the bad guys, like in pro wrestling and shit. I was a fan of The Rock when he was in The Nation, you know. I was always a heel guy. So when I found out there was this kid flipping the bird and just beating people's asses, I was like, dude, this is dope. So we, you know, back then YouTube was hot, you know, as fire. So we would just jump on YouTube out in the boat and just watch these classic fights. And I discovered Pride. And then when I got out of the Navy, I was discovered like a Movie Maker, and I started making highlight reels because like Rocky IV was my favorite movie of all time. Right? And the montage scene from Rocky IV, you know, No Easy Way Out, I think that is what made me want to make my very first highlight. And I started making these fighter highlights and stuff like that, and sure as shit, dude, I'm getting like people reaching out to me and being like, oh, you know, this is dope, can you make me one? And then I'll never forget like getting that message from Nick Diaz being like, this is the dopest shit ever, you want to come smoke? And I'm like fanboying the fuck out at the time, you know. Not believe it. And eventually I got tired of editing other people's footage because I was just stealing everybody's footage, and then, you know, Zuffa would pull it down and all this other shit. So I was like, fuck that, I'm just gonna film my own shit. So I picked up a camera, and you know, they say fake it till you make it. So I was just like, yeah, man, I'll come in your gym and film. And I get along with everybody pretty much. So I just knew that if I made friends with the head coach of the gym, that, you know, the rest of the fighters underneath would be like, yeah, sure, it's cool to take my picture. Next thing I know, I'm like in King's MMA with Rafael Cordero and Fabricio Verdum, Fabulusa Brawl and King Mo. I mean, this is when they were like, you know, in their prime right now, I feel like. And it was just such a surreal experience. And and then I ended up working for Fabricio Verdum's fight camp. It was the very first camp I ever documented when he beat Fedor, and no one gave him a shot in hell. So imagine being a part of that camp. Like, that was pretty
insane.
It was a trip. But that's pretty much how I got started. And after that, it was just like going to events, networking, you know, reaching out to people online, people reaching out to me. Hitman Dan was a huge part of like me growing as, you know, meeting people. Hitman Dan was the owner of Hitman Fight Gear. And he was basically the one that was like, here, man, I got you like hooked up here. Go film this. You're going to go here and film that. And like, he was putting me in like perfect places just to meet the right people. And, you know, shit, man, I'm just a networking guru, I guess. And then the next thing I know, I'm fucking working for Ronda Rousey and we're going around tour doing the WWE shit. Fast forward 12 years later, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, are you surprised by the rapid like growth of MMA? You know how within the sports community, it just blew up, and you for the last 11 years have been covering it. Does it surprise you at all?
I don't want to say it surprised me. I want to say it's a little disappointing how oversaturated it is. I mean, shit, back when I was watching, when we first started, and you boys can remember, we knew everybody from top to bottom on this fight card. And we were pissed that we couldn't watch the prelims. Remember that? I mean, like, now it's just like, I don't even know who half these guys are. And I know I'm a little out of touch. But I went, you know, I jumped in the WWE and just got consumed in their world and kind of fell out of touch with MMA for a little bit. But, and I feel like we're missing the big stars. I mean, aside from Conor McGregor, I think Adesanya's got some good juice behind him. I like where he's going. But, I don't know.
He sure does.
Whenever the Diaz brothers are on the shelf, too, it's always disappointing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, not to sound like a complete fanboy, but to me, like, that's where Conor McGregor got the blueprint from those boys.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know.
You think Nick's coming back?
Dude, what's scary is that Nick can jump off the couch and whoop someone's ass. You know what I'm saying? He can jump off the couch. Dude, he can jump off the couch after a bender. And dude, let me tell you something. When Nick and I used to like hang out in Vegas and stuff like that, and obviously people know Nick's frequenting the nightclub. I mean, he posted all over his Instagram and stuff like that. That kid and I could be out all night, and you know I'd be getting hammered. I'm not gonna say he was or wasn't, but my point is I'd be going to like bed, and this kid would be walking back in the hotel room like full sweating, wearing jogging gear. Like, Nick, where the fuck were you? He's like, oh, I just hit like an 8-mile run. I'm like, dude, what is wrong with you, bro? I haven't even slept yet, and like you just. Like, you're crazy. He's just insane. Built from, like, he's cut from a different cloth, not even cloth, iron. He's just an animal. But yeah, I think that guy could just wake up and fight anybody at any given time and give them a damn good run for their money. Like, the thing is, no one wants to fight Nick Diaz. They want that matchup, but no one really wants to, you know, fight to the death and like kill or be killed type shit. And so.
Well, yeah. I don't blame anyone for not wanting to fight him.
Yeah, I mean,
it's suicide.
Tough character. Very intimidating. Very, you know, he's an OG in the sport too. And what's crazy is that he might even be the healthiest he's ever been, because he hasn't been, you know, overworking himself, fighting 3-4 times a year like he's done his entire career. So, shit, you know, an injury-free Nick Diaz. Not that he's ever complained or said shit about one, but, you know, I don't know. I'd like to see it if he wants to fight. I don't want to see Nick fight for any other reason other than he wants to fight somebody. Nick doesn't really enjoy fighting, so I think the only thing that's going to entice him is a lot of money.
Yeah,
without question. And you've been part of so many legendary camps by this point. I'm going to ask you a very tough question. Do you have a favorite MMA fighter of all time?
Josh Neer.
Okay. Yeah.
Dude. Yeah. I think Josh Neer was the first dude that I saw, other than Nick. And then for him to fight both Nick and Nate, I thought was awesome. I just thought Josh Neer was like the baddest dude. I don't know why, but you know, I remember him distinctly being like the first guy in the UFC. I'm like, yeah, I'm a fan of that guy. But as far as like greatest fighter of all time and my favorite, it's got to be Nick Diaz. I mean, hands down. But other than you know the obvious Nick and Nate, I'd say Josh Neer.
Do you think,
without question,
do you think in terms of abilities in the ring, is it the striker or the grappler who typically you would feel has the advantage going into the cage?
Man, that's such a good question, because it really can't be answered. And, like, everybody's different, you know, but if it was me, if I had to, you know, train my girlfriend to survive in the cage, I'd want her to be a sufficient grappler, you know, and learn, you know, how to defend herself in those kind of positions. So, yeah, I think grappling is the key element in mixed martial arts.
And I think, too,
I think, too,
when you're talking about grappling, I think bringing up your girlfriend is always the best person to grapple with.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And I told her, I want her to be able to defend herself. God forbid anything ever happens. And what's funny is that I've worked for so many female MMA fighters, and some of them are very unassuming. Like, dude, imagine picking a fight with Jessica Penne at the bar and or mouthing off to her. And next thing you know, this 115-pound chick is, like, tying you in knots. And, like, she can basically make you say anything she wants. I mean, you could be her human puppet, and, you know, and that would be the most embarrassing thing ever. But I think that's awesome. I want my girlfriend to know, like, just in case, you know, I don't ever want you to fight, but just in case, you need to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
And women's MMA is taking off right now. You got some really good fighters. And, you know, you've hung around, you know, some incredible fighters. How cool is it to see, like, through her whole journey, Shayna Baszler go from MMA fighter to being a sports entertainer?
Dude, that story makes me so happy. Like, Shayna was so ahead of her time in mixed martial arts. You're talking about a girl who'd fight anytime, any weight, didn't matter. She was fighting the baddest of the baddest. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of female fighters out there at that time. And there definitely wasn't any pay. So, shit, I wouldn't doubt if Shayna fought for free at times. You know, now these girls, shit, you go and pad your record, your amateur record, and then you get, you know, basically you're ready to go in the UFC. Maybe one or two fights in Invicta. It doesn't take much to build, you know, a female star and build a name for yourself and become a household name at this point, because it's not as oversaturated as the males' divisions, in my opinion. I just got distracted. What was I saying?
About
Shayna and how the girls now.
Oh, yeah, about Shayna. Yeah, just ahead of her time. And just, it's awesome, because if she were to start, you know, around the same time these days as these girls, I feel like she'd be right up there, if not, you know, challenging for the title. And it sucks. I know she felt like, 'cause when we all lived together, I know she felt like the oldest, you know, hen in the coop. And I felt like she felt like her time was, you know, what are you going to do after this, you know? And we all started watching pro wrestling in that house together, because everybody was in fight camp. So, shit, no drinking, no party, nothing like that. There's nothing much to do rather than, you know, watch wrestling. Me and Shayna and Jessamine and, you know, sometimes Marina and Rhonda would watch, you know, some classic ass wrestling together. And I just knew that eventually I knew that all those girls were going to get involved eventually. But Shayna is just overachieved like no other. I'm just beyond impressed with her and what she's been able to accomplish. And I'm just super stoked for her. That she's a superstar, you know, now.
What is Shayna's best quality in terms of what she's brought to her wrestling that you can actually go and say that you saw that in her while you were at the, you know, living together at the camp.
Shayna's just charismatic as fuck, man. She could own a room whenever she's telling a story. Everybody just shuts the fuck up and listens, you know, and she's funny and, you know, she gets good pops and her delivery is good. And you knew that she has no problem. You know, I've stuck the camera in her face so many times and just shot the shit. If you go back and look, there's super old videos of us talking pro wrestling before this was even a whisper. I'm talking about before the Bench Koea fight and all, any of those.
Right.
Just us being super fans, you know, and marks. And, yeah, it's just an interesting listen. But I just knew back then she just can shoot on the spot and, you know, ready, set, go. And Shayna's there. And more so than I would say, like, Ronda. Ronda knows what she wants to say, but, you know, you put Ronda on the spot sometimes and she might get flustered if she gets caught off guard.
Sure.
You know, or doesn't like where she thinks it's going. Shayna has the ability to sway and, you know, make things, you know, how she wants them to be. I don't know. I knew that her in-ring didn't have to be anything flashy because she's such a submission artist that
right.
She could, you know, she tells a story. You know, The Undertaker didn't have a shit ton of moves. He definitely wasn't doing flips and high spots. But, you know, Taker told a story, and I feel like Shayna does a great job of that.
Did you just book a Taker versus Shayna match? Because that would be phenomenal.
Let's go. That's another thing. Intergender wrestling needs to come back. I popped so hard when Nia Jax entered the Royal Rumble. I thought that was the dopest shit ever. I'm so tired of it. I go to bar wrestling and shit all the time, and like that's part of my favorite independent show ever, bar wrestling. That and Brian Kendrick's show, Wrestling Pro Wrestling, is awesome. If you guys get a chance, you need to check that out.
Absolutely.
No question. And going back, I mean, you mentioned earlier that you've always been a wrestling fan. Was that from like way early on?
Yeah, dude, I cried my eyes out when Diesel powerbombed Bret Hart after Bret Hart small packaged him. Remember that? Remember Diesel was whooping his ass, and then Diesel started to feel bad. And then, dude, Bret was my hero as a kid. And that's like, I remember as a child, my dad, you know, he was kind of a rock star in the 80s. He had a one-hit wonder, so he had a little bit of pull, and he always had friends. So we got the limo treatment and got to go backstage, meet all the pro wrestlers. And I had no idea what I was seeing as a kid. I'm like, I'm in the hotel. I'm seeing The Undertaker out of costume, Razor Ramon shooting the shit with Diesel and Shawn Michaels. They're all hanging out. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? You know, I'm like probably 5 years old, 6 years old. But I'll never forget you going back to meet Bret Hart because my dad knew that he was my favorite, and Bret put his jacket on me and got to meet Owen. So it goes back that far. I'm like 5, 4, 5, 6 maybe. Like, yeah, for sure. I've been a fan for a long time. Then, you know, then you kind of grow out of it because, shit, you know, you grow out of it. But now it's cool again to be a wrestling fan, and I think it's awesome. Because I've thoroughly enjoyed going to the shows and seeing some of my friends, you know, turn performers. That's awesome.
Who
was your favorite growing up?
Other than Brett? Bret Hart was my favorite by far. But it was like
what?
Brett, Razor Ramon. God. Stone Cold, obviously. Everyone loves Stone Cold. DX. I mean, I was a part of the Attitude Era growing up as a kid, and I used to have to stay up. Like, my bedtime was 8 o'clock, and that's when Raw came on. And I used to have my TV jury, because we didn't have remotes back then. I used to have my TV jury rigged with, like, a hanger. So then when I saw my mom coming down the hall, I pulled the thing, and it would turn off the TV. And so, I used to watch Monday Night Raw in terror that my mom was going to whoop my ass. For staying up past my bedtime watching TV, but there was no way I was missing it. It was, pro wrestling was so great back then, especially, you know, you know, before Beyond the Mat and all that shit came out and everybody, you know,
before
everybody
it was,
knew it was all.
Yeah. Over the years, who have you found to be the toughest person to get an interview out of?
Nick Diaz, hands down. Oh my God. If Nick Diaz can possibly do anything with, see, like, and especially since we're already friends, once that's the mistake too I made is once you become friends with somebody, you don't want to stick a camera in their face and like, and that was kind of like, if I was going to do that, and I didn't want to do that anymore, ultimately, because of that, I was tired of sticking cameras in my friends' faces and asking questions that I knew that the media and everybody wanted to know and the fans wanted to know, but they didn't feel like answering. You know, I was just, like, tired of doing it for clicks and tired of doing it for money. So that's where I started the personal videographer and personal photographer, where I started working for fighters and ultimately ended up leaving Middle Easy after Zeus sold it. And which I was super thankful for everything that Zeus and Middle Easy did for my career. It was time for me to do something else. But yeah, interviewing Diaz or anybody like that, for me was a nightmare. Yeah, Jesus
recently, Christ. Yeah, recently, Kane crossed over to WWE. Did you also see DC doing the same?
Dude, I've been begging DC. But DC's making so much money, and he's just, you know, he's got his family. But I also think that he could do, like, a couple one appearances here and there, and I think he would do great. He's a real wrestling fan, too. Like, he knows his shit. And DC and I used to watch wrestling during his camp, and he'd be like, this guy's going to be a star. And I'd be like, Elias Samson? Are you kidding me? And I'm like, he's like, yep, watch. He's like, watch. And you're talking early Elias. Before it was just Elias. It was Elias Samson. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Next thing you know, he's stealing the fucking show. And I'll be damned. I remember texting DC and be like, you were fucking right. You were absolutely right. I forget what he ripped on. Elias ripped on somebody's sports team. I think we were in Seattle, and he ripped on them for not having a basketball team. And it was the longest boo. It was the most heat I've ever heard in person. And I just smiled, tears of joy. Like, it was just fucking great, because I was just thinking to myself, yep, DC called this one too. But, yeah, he has all the ability in the world to be a great booker too. Like, if he was matchmaking, he'd be great.
Yeah, I think it would be great if he did, you know, a couple one-offs. You obviously got, you know, the natural one with him and Brock, which would be huge. And a couple others. You look at guys that transition from wrestling to, you know, amateur wrestling, or, you know, what most consider amateur wrestling, to then go over to, you know, sports entertainment, as they call it now, or pro wrestling. Like Kurt Angle, and I just think it would be natural for him to pick that up, and he's already got the mic skills too, so I think he would do phenomenal.
Oh, DC would slay on the mic. That he can shoot so fast, and like, you'd believe it. You'd be like, damn, like, if he shot on you, if I was just like, yo, just shoot on these boys, like, he, you guys would, damn, DC, are you really like pissed at us? Like, and then he'd be like, no, this man. He's so good with his poker face, and like, yeah, he's cut out perfectly for that. And he's still in great shape. I think he could do it awesome. I wouldn't even book him one-on-one. You know, I would do exactly what Triple H did with Ronda. And that Kurt Angle and Ronda match with Stephanie and Triple H, to me, that was one of my favorite matches of all time. And I was with them when they were building that match. Because, you know, I'm there, and I'm giddy like a kid in a candy store, knowing how awesome this match is before Mania. But you know what, dude? Doesn't matter, because shit happens, especially under the, you know, anything can go wrong. You can miss a spot. Timing was everything in that match. So it was just like, I would do something like that with DC, where by the time he does get that tag, the roof fucking blows off the place, you know, because that guy couldn't say or do the wrong thing. DC is a total babyface.
Yeah, that match, I was there live, and that match was one of the best matches of the night. I mean, it just flowed perfectly.
Yeah, it was insane. It was a great match. I remember I have a little bit of footage. I have so much footage, actually, but a lot of it, like, we'll never see a light of day. Or Ronda owns most of it and is waiting to do whatever, you know, she wants to do with it. But there was a moment where I couldn't help. But, you know, everybody's in the back during the matches, pretty much. You know, there's catering's huge, and especially during WrestleMania. Like, one of my favorite parts about being on tour was catering. It was just awesome. The food was great. People would sit there and they'd watch the matches that were going on, and you eat great food. I'm telling you, no one was eating during that match. Everybody was glued to the TV, and you're talking about legends. You name it, they were sitting there watching it, and everyone was just floored by the performance and how great the match was. And I had to pull out my camera and record a little bit of everybody's reaction. I was the only one to really do so. It's kind of like a private area. It's not something you do. You don't really record in that area. Then again, you know me, never miss a moment, right? So I pull out my camera, sure enough, film it. And, yeah, just seeing the reactions of, like, The Undertaker and, I mean, like I said, Bill Goldberg. Everyone that was anyone was watching right there, and she just got mad props from everybody. And no one had a clue what was coming because, you know, she was only training with a few people, and it was all behind closed doors. No one knew what to expect. Meanwhile, we had been putting in the work for like 3 months at Brian Kendrick's, like three times a week. Yep. And I was with Rhonda every day for the train, filming every session. So, you know, she was ready. But, you know, like I said, anything can go wrong, especially on a big stage like that. And to have your debut on that kind of stage and still pull off the match tonight, that's pretty impressive. I think DC can do the same thing, though.
Do you think with something like Ronda's debut, or even in UFC, are people gathering to watch backstage out of curiosity of if this person is going to just fall flat on their face?
Let me tell you something. It felt like Rocky IV in the beginning. Like, you know, when Ronda and I were like, you know, we were in the WWE. And it felt like we were in the Soviet, and it was just like we weren't not necessarily. It felt like there was a lot of resentment from a lot of people, even if there might not have been at all. It just, in our minds, we're like, how could they not? How could they really want us here? You know, I'm running amok with the camera, doing whatever the hell I want because I got fucking Willy Wonka's gold ticket from Triple H to basically film and do anything I want on behalf of Rhonda. And so, yeah, shit. What was I saying? Sorry, I'm fucking stoned.
But the curiosity if someone's going to fall on their face.
Oh, yeah, that's because you can see it backstage. When the match was starting, there was people, it was like hyenas licking their lips. They're just waiting to be like, I told you so, that spot should have been mine. And it's rightfully so, because, you know, you got girls back there that have been putting in the damn work and taking bumps for, you know, 90% of the year, you know, being on tour and damn, how could you say they don't deserve that spot? So Rhonda knew there was a lot of pressure on her, and you know, she had to shine. But by the end of it, like I said, it was like Rocky IV. If I could change, you could change, that kind of shit. And by the end, everybody was so supportive. And I mean, I'll never forget following Rhonda around after that match, and everybody from Daniel Bryan to AJ Styles, everybody coming up just being like, that was incredible. And Paige, everybody, you know, Rhonda was in tears getting, you know, because these are all people that she had admired and she really desperately wanted to impress, and she, you know, knocked it out of the park. So, but yeah, there was definitely before then, people were you know, imagine, you know, being a pro baseball player or being a pro basketball player and, you know, your first hit in a baseball game is a home run. And you're like, oh, I could do this shit. No problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it felt like. But
let me ask you this. Yeah. With so many great photos through the years, have you ever thought about making a coffee table book with your experiences?
Yeah, I think that when the time comes, it'll be it depends on how much I actually want to reveal, you know. Like, I know where all the skeletons are buried, pretty much, to say the least. And you know, it's just part of me is like, man, that should just all be kept personal. And part of me is like, man, I lived one hell of a life and was a part of some major people's lives as well. And it was just like experience and stuff that I feel like I really want to share. But part of me is like, man, some of it's just too personal, you know? So I don't know. I'm on the fence.
Speaking of too personal,
I could half-ass it. There's no way I could half-ass it and just put out, you know, like a lame-ass shit. I would either go hard or go home.
Speaking of too...
Yeah, you definitely got to go hard.
Speaking of too personal, you know, you mentioned your dad and Into the Night was the hit back then in 1980.
Yeah.
But your dad went through fame and the crutches of, you know, getting hooked on cocaine and living that rock star lifestyle. Is that something?
Oh, yeah. My dad was the definition of a savage.
So is that something that you are aware of? Because you didn't, you know, you got born a few years after, you know, that period. Was that something that you learned about later on in life? And is it something that you're, you know?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know shit. My dad was sober when I was born. And all the way up. And I mean, my dad smoked some pot. And that was about it. I'd never seen my dad drunk one time in my life. Never seen him high other than off of weed. But I found out once, like, the documentary that had been released, or they were making on him, I saw a rough copy, and I don't even remember how old I was, but I was just like, I'm looking at both my parents, like, what the fuck, you know, like, and then, you know, even then, I was such a kid, I didn't realize how famous dad was, or like, well, you know, and how big the song was that, you know, he had. And, but yeah, it was a trip. It was a trip finding all that out later on in life and then being like, oh, well, no wonder I party so hard. You know, I found out shit about my mom too. I'm just like, oh man, you guys are savages. And, you know, but I love my parents. They're great, but they tried their hardest to protect me from knowing about that. That's why, I mean, shit, could you imagine, you know, these days you can't hide nothing.
Yeah.
It's just like, bam. So.
Did you,
yep.
Did you ever think about, trying to, grow a mullet that would rival your dad's mullet?
No, dude, I could never. I did have one actually when I was a kid. We had matching mullets, when I was very, very young. Yeah, he was so upset, you know. They had to shave his head when he had the DBS for Parkinson's. They, you know, they did the Parkinson's surgery for him, but in order to do that, they had to shave his head. He was devastated. I'm like, dude, I've been wanting to do that for like 15 years, Dad. Like, that shit, you know, it's been long gone. I remember, like, Dad's hair was so long, too, that sometimes they'd be like, excuse me, ma'am. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I crack on Dad hella hard. Because my dad and I roast each other. I mean, yeah, he makes fun of my big beard all the time. Like, yeah, he's like, why don't you shave? You'll figure homeless and, you know, this kind of shit. So, yeah, no, we have that kind of relationship. But, yeah, never could rival his mullet. Mike Chiesa gave him a good run for it, though.
Oh, yeah, without question.
Yeah.
You've traveled to many different cities and countries during this amazing journey. Is there one place that you hold dear and dear to your heart that you visited?
There's a couple places. Santa Cruz is a huge, huge, it's very special to me for multiple reasons. I met my girlfriend in Santa Cruz. Luke gave me, when I was kind of down and out, feeling like I was just over everything, over the MMA scene, and I just burned out, of it. And Luke kind of picked me up, scooped me up, remolded me. And because of that, because I was working, his fight camp, I ended up meeting my girlfriend. I also ended up becoming really close and working for Daniel Cormier and getting in close with all the AKA boys, which I think to me might be my favorite camp I've ever worked for. I mean, it's hard not to. Those guys are fucking awesome, So Santa Cruz is definitely a top spot up there. I'll never forget Japan ever. I'll never forget Japan, and I can't wait to go back. Melbourne, Australia was a lot of fun too. I'm still dying to go to Ireland, so I want to go see a fight in Ireland. I think that'd be awesome. So,
gotta get Connor to do a main event over there,
dude. I wish. A lot of people don't know, but like I almost had Connor and Nick and Nate all hanging out. I almost had when Connor was we picked up on him in Middle Easy way back day when he was just throwing hooks in over there in Ireland, and I was like, this kid badass, like, and we were calling him, I wonder if I could find the article, it's called the Irish Diaz brother. And that's what we picked up on him early. So when he started making way over here, I told Rhonda at the time, and she was all about having people come and stay at her beach house, and she was all about hosting them and letting them come straight at the gym, and she was living the life, and she was on top of the world. So I was like, dude, we should invite this Conor McGregor kid out. Tried to get it out. He was super down. I had the Facebook messages. It was just a trip how close it came. And then it didn't work out. The next thing I know, I'm in Vegas, and I reach out to him again because Nick was trying to find a place to train. And I was like, hey, that Conor McGregor kid's in town. You want me to invite him? And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to capture this on film because it's going to be fucking gold. And even then, I didn't realize, what it was like diamonds, what would have been. But long story short, it didn't end up happening. Nick, wasn't on, Nick was on his own schedule. So it was just crazy how close they came, because if they would have met, I guarantee they would have been friends, and it would have been a completely different story. We wouldn't have got that amazing first and second fight out of Nate and Connor, had he been friends with the camp, cause they don't fight each other. So it's just crazy how close they came. I guess it's for the better, because look how much money they made. On those two fights.
And there's money in a third fight, too. I mean, they broke the gate with the second
those
fight.
Those roll up in a wheelchair, and people would still watch those two fights.
Would you want to see that fight, or would you want to see the rematch with him and Khabib?
Oh no, I want to see Connor and Nate, no doubt about it. That for me is much more appealing. And then the winner of that, could fight Khabib. And let me tell you something, it's going to be tough to beat that guy though. That guy is a monster. I witnessed him firsthand at AKA training with the boys, and I've never seen such a guy so little be so dominant. And it's like he's wrestling bears in there, for real. It's a trip.
Right. And, it's crazy because we were talking about grappling earlier, and you look at his base, and it's all grappling. They have the video out there.
Yeah, the boy got hands, too, and he can take a punch, man. His jaw is iron. He moves well. Connor can really box and really strike, and, you go back and watch that fight, and, Connor has his hands full.
Yep.
So I don't know. It's gonna be tough to dethrone that guy. I think I know Nate does. Nate's never liked him, ever. Nate's hated that guy for so long. And they've had a few riots and incidents break out. I don't know if you guys remember it happened in Vegas, too, when the chairs went flying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, either way, there's whoever gets by. But I wouldn't book either one of them for any other fight other than each other. It's got to be Diaz and Connor right now, and then the winner fights can be fuck anything else because, you know, that's the latter, in my opinion.
That's a great money fight.
At camps, is there a sense of camaraderie that lends to boys ribbing each other?
Oh my god, dude! Sometimes I'm in AKA and I think these boys are really gonna fight each other. Luke and DC talk so much shit to each other. Well, DC talks shit to everybody, but. Luke tries to get it back, and I love Luke to death, but you can't fuck with DC. He's just, he'll roast you. So the best thing to do is just shut up and work hard. But yeah, it gets, they rib each other so hard, but it's either I'm holding my breath that somebody doesn't take some shit personal, or I'm in tears laughing because of the hilarity of the roasting that's going on in the gym. Deron Wynn too, he's a funny motherfucker. When him, Kyle Kretschmer and DC are all in the same room, you're gonna be laughing until you're in tears, I guarantee it. Those boys are funny, especially in the gym.
You had a video on your YouTube where you had your arm broken and, you know, the recovery behind that. Do you still actively train MMA, and how long have you trained MMA or jiu-jitsu, man, more specifically?
I'm trying to remember the first time I actually trained. Oh, okay. I think it was with Jason Manley, who's a Caesar Gracie black belt. I trained, I didn't even train with him. I trained with these they were like 13-year-old boys, but they looked like little roly-polies. I mean, they were heavy-set Armenian boys, they whooped my fucking ass. And I must have been like, I don't know, shit, 23, 24 maybe. And I was like, I went outside and threw up, you know, right after, because I was just dying. And then first time I ever put on a gi was during Fabricio Verdum's camp. And I put on my pants back. Oh, because I showed up to film one day, and they're like, "Hey, man, they had an in-house tournament, and they're like, we're one man short. We need you." And I'm like, "I'm not no bitch." They asked me in front of everybody too, so I'm like, "Fuck it, let's go." Had no idea how to put that shit on. Put my pants on backwards. Fucking couldn't tie my belt. Obviously, Fabricio's laughing at me tying my belt. But I went the distance with the guy in the first, and I got a standing ovation because no one expected that and just expected me to fucking get choked unconscious. But, it wasn't until I didn't really start training until I went to go work for Nate in Stockton, and he gave me a room inside the gym, rent free. He was like, all you gotta do is train. And I had my own room. Shower, everything, and I'll tell you what, man, I was turning into like what I felt was just like a psycho, because all I wanted to do was train, and I started competing, and I really wanted to get my blue belt under Randy Spence at the Stockton Academy. I just felt like he was just a man, and so yeah, I really wanted that shit. And then I got my arm broken in that jiu-jitsu tournament. And that shit sucked, man. When you go from training twice a day and being in, like, the best shape of your life and just being surrounded by people that are also, like, trying to push you, and then you're, next thing you know, you're eating fucking 8 painkillers a day, you know, you're super depressed. Thank God for Fallout 4, because, like, I had Fallout 4 on the Xbox that I was just geeking out on. It was all the only thing I could do. It was just fucking awful. And now I'm 34, man. Like, I just trained the other day with Casey Smith, Jessica I's little brother. And, you know, I've trained with them a couple times and got great workouts. But just a freak accident, went to go post and, you know, dislocated my thumb. And I thought I snapped it completely off. Like, I expected, like, flesh to be showing when I looked at it. It was so funny. And it wasn't. It was just, you know, pop the back end type of thing. But I'm old, man. I'm tired of getting injured. If anything, I think I'd get back to boxing a little bit. But, yeah, my back is shot. My knees are shot. So, yeah, jiu-jitsu, I think my days are done when it comes to that. But
speaking of boxing, what do you think about the biggest fight that just happened with Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury?
Well, I loved it. First of all, I had a party over here for it. I thought it was a very exciting fight. I bet on Fury to go the distance, but I was super happy, even though he stopped him. I was really shocked to see the low numbers that it did pay per view wise when it came back.
Yeah.
Because I thought there was enough fight, and you know, usually it's the heavyweights that draw. I mean, historically it's you know, the baddest man on the planet, right? I mean, so I was a little shocked. I heard that Tyson Fury donated his entire purse to the homeless, and then I heard he went out to, I don't know if this is true or not, I don't know, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but he went to a seafood joint and released all the lobsters into the ocean from the seafood.
No way.
Yeah.
That is
how funny is that? Yeah. I
he's
really
wacky like that.
Yeah, and I think it's hilarious. You know, his story, you know, the things that he's overcome, how can you not be a fan, even if you think he's a little wacky or a little, like, you know, I'm still like, God, that's a great story. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's really cool, yeah.
I'll watch them fight again for sure. I think they're...
July.
Yeah.
Yeah, July.
But that, they're running it back in July.
Yeah, I think it's they just announced it yesterday. The third one is going to take place in July.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, too. I know a lot of people are giving Deontay a lot of flack about, like, him making excuses and stuff like that. I don't know, man. Walk around with 40 pounds for a little bit and then take that shit off. And yeah, he's a dummy for doing that in the first place, in my opinion. Should have known better. But he did look unusually tired early going into that fight, and I was a little surprised.
Yeah.
So, but not saying that. Not saying Tyson didn't box his ass off, because he did.
Yeah, no, absolutely he did. I think also, too, the punch behind the head, I think, was a big factor. And after that, I mean, early on, first of all, Fury was 40 pounds heavier.
Right. Oh my God! I knew
strategy.
Yeah,
that was crazy, right?
I knew that was going to be a key factor. I remember seeing the weigh-in and just being like, "Jesus Christ!" I'm like, if I'm Tyson Fury, I'm putting my body into this guy, and I'm going to wear him down. I'm going to make him carry me. And dude, there was a certain point where I had money on Fury, and I'm still like, "Dude, come on with the guillotines right now, like, bro!"
Right.
He's just putting his big ass body on top. And I'm telling you, like, I'm not saying it was cheating, but it was very strategic. to say the least, you know what I'm saying? Cause I mean, it was so blatantly obvious. And I think, wasn't there a point deducted at some point in the fight? Am I wrong? Or,
and what no, was you're it right. For? It was.
Was it
I
for
think it was. I think it was him holding.
Yeah, we were all pretty jacked up and excited over here. We had a big party over here, so it was. I don't know, man. I thought it was still a great fight, very entertaining.
All right, as we wrap up, what is one thing that you can reveal safely that fans wouldn't know about Ronda?
Fans wouldn't know about Ronda. Jesus Christ. I mean, you guys know she cries a lot. God, that's a tough one. I don't even know, to be honest, because she's been she's been pretty open. She's been doing this YouTube stuff and giving people pretty much all access inside of her life these days. I think she's doing it on her own terms. But I don't know, man. One thing people don't know about Rhonda. Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't even say. I'm stumped on that one. Sorry to disappoint, guys.
No, that's okay, because we don't want you to reveal too much, obviously. But you know, that's good to know.
I will say that I don't think there's any way possible that she's done with the WWE. I know, just that you're gonna hear that Jones yet at some point or another, at least one more time. I just have a feeling.
Oh, I hope so. And not only that, but they still have to do the Four Horsewomen.
Oh, God. Oh, shut up.
How do you not book that for Survivor Series? Survivor Series.
Exactly.
And you know what I do? You know what I do if I'm booking the match? I have Shayna heel turn on Ronda when they're the last two left. And I have her, like, throw Sasha on top of Ronda after she, like, hits her finisher, you know, or chokes out, something like that. Because that, you know, that'd be Ronda just passing the ultimate torch to Shayna, being like, "You're the shit now." Because eventually Ronda's gonna be done and ride off in the sunset and have babies, and that's gonna be the real. That'll be the end of it for real. But I have to see that heel turn before it's all said and done. I have to.
Well, there we go. Well, it's been an awesome time talking, brother. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
And who, if fans want to follow you, if they don't follow your social media, what's your handles so they could follow you?
Yeah, it's just pretty much Lazy the Savage across the board. LayZie, like Lazy Bone. But yeah, Lazy the Savage, Instagram, Twitter is where I'm mainly at. And yeah, hit me up.
Awesome, brother. Thank you so much. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.